KXRN LP.
Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach.
Member supported.
KXFM
on 104.7.
KXFMradio.org.
Couple of minutes after 8 o'clock, a Monday edition of the Mornings with Ed show. Welcome to the program, as we will be doing from now on throughout the summer, bringing you the Artist Corner. The Artist Corner is brought to you by the Sawdust Art Festival, going on now through August 28th, and we are delighted to have with us an artist that is fearless in his life and in art as well, always stretching the boundaries and pushing the different mediums. Bruce Friend is with us this morning, a true artist. You've seen him. If you've gone to Sawdust, you've seen his glass-blowing demonstrations. I can't wait for this conversation. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, and thanks for having us.
How are you today?
Fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to see you. And so you showed up about 20 minutes ago, and we've just been just talking about everything. Let's take that conversation to the air right now.
You bet. Well, you know, we connect a lot on a level of being the same age and dealing with music in the classic era.
Right.
So we have a lot of things in common as far as that is concerned. You know, and then also we're going to be talking about the Sawdust and how fantastic.
Well, yeah, but here's what I love about you. In the first 30 seconds that we were opening mouths here, I'm learning all kinds of stuff. It was 30 seconds, and I'm like, really? 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 Very cool. So how long have you been at Sawdust?
I've been at the Sawdust for 35 years.
35 years, yeah. Okay. And as you look at it now and remember it back 35 years ago, give me some of the changes and then some of the things that remained exactly the same.
Well, I'm not sure anything remains exactly the same, but, you know, there's been a lot of changes through the years. I mean, you know, you talk about 35 years ago, things at the Sawdust were loose. Everything was a lot looser. We stayed open later. You know, there wasn't quite as much regimen. You know, as you go through this many years, things change. The city, you know, we used to build booths that were 36 feet high and they were swinging in the wind and, you know, weren't to code and things like that. And Then finally the city comes and go, okay, now you guys got to calm down here a little and start getting this electrical correct and build the booth to code and all this stuff, which has happened through the years. The art has evolved through the people through the years. I would say the biggest thing that has changed is, you know, we had an old generation of artists that have been, a lot of us, now I've been doing it for 30, there's people who have been doing that show for 50 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Needless to say, they're getting old and they're starting to pass away. But luckily, we're starting to get a new generation of artists coming in. And so if you're an artist and you think you want to do the Sawdust, come on down. We're always ready for some new influx of beautiful art being created and come down and join us.
How has your art changed in this time, in these 30 plus years? And has it changed or do you still image things the same way in your head?
Well, my art has changed a lot. I mean, the one thing, you know, even though I've been blowing glass for 45 years, the thing that I love about glass is there is a million things you can do with it. You can do over... glass is made with multiple overlays of different colors and things like this. Well, you know, if you study this stuff, I've been fortunate enough to go to a school called Pilchuck that a guy named Dale Chihuly founded 50 years ago. And they have the best masters from all over the world teaching their forte. And so you sign up for these classes. They're hard to get into, but you learn this new experience, this new technique, and then you put it into your own work and try and make a new series. So to me, the fun thing about glass is watching it evolve. I got this idea. Wait a minute. Take it here. Take it there. All of a sudden you go, wow, look at this. Made a new series. Right. Fantastic.
Right. Yeah. So you, and I don't want to embarrass you here, but your glass work, your glass blowing is spectacular. And the finished product, when you see your booth, the finished product of your work is amazing.
Thank you. That's very kind.
Well, no, it's very true. I more so than just the technical of watching you do it is the imagination behind the pieces you create. You have to think of your final product in three-dimensional terms.
Yes. Yes.
What is that process like?
Well, you know, a lot of times when you're making these series, you may start off with a series and most of my, occasionally at night, if I have an idea, I'll write it down. But most of the time, it's in my mind. And I go, okay, this is the way to take it. So I start making it, and then I go, okay, that worked. But I think I can make it better if I switch this one thing or layer it onto the piece in a different atmosphere. And so I may change it, and then all of a sudden, five times down the line, you go, there it is. There's the new series. And the people that collect my work, they come in and they go, well, where's the new stuff? Where's the new stuff? And the funny thing is, they don't know it, but a lot of times I'll make a new series and I'll put the piece out. They don't know it's the brand new piece I've made, but that piece is getting all the energy.
Right.
I don't know why that's happening,
right,
but they're all over the new piece, which is a neat thing.
Right.
But they don't know it's new, but they're still going to it. That's an interesting thing, which I can't quite fathom, but it's fantastic. I'll take it. I love it.
Now, the process of your demonstrations, first of all, the crowds draw around that fenced area where you do the demonstrations. And I noticed and this may have been last summer, where I saw you with that flat, large tray that you added specks of glitter or color or gold. Yeah. It was wonderful. And I saw that finished piece with the sun shining off it. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what process is that where you add the flex to it?
Well, that's dichroic glass, and that's, it's interesting. 20 years ago, actually now it's 40, dichroic glass was actually developed in NASA for tracking satellites because of the heavy metal content. And it found its way into the art glass world.
Right.
And they vaporized in this $500,000 machine at 300 degrees, these metals onto the sheets of glass in a vacuum forming chamber. Then I buy them. They're very expensive, probably $120 a sheet. Then I cut it with a stained glass cutter, set it up. You have to preheat it. There's all these technical things that come along with glass blowing. Right. So you have to approach it a certain way and, you know, heat the thing up, and then you roll it into the piece, and then you're right. Once the piece is done, wow, because right. it reflects light, and it's just does some fantastic things in the light. So it's and as a demonstration, it's fantastic. People kind of go, well, why is that so bright? You know, and they ask that all the time. They go, why is that so bright? And you know, I explained, I'm always talking about glass and the things that go into it and how easy it is to lose it and how expensive it is to make it and the energy it takes to consume, because I want the public to understand the difficulties of glass and the things that go along with it, and hopefully they get some of the love that I have for glass coming through to them.
And how much of your, and we do, and by the way, with your demonstrations, I'll also add that you explain very well. It's very much like a professor who has this amazing skill that is able to explain that skill to the average guy just standing there. So thank you for that. The shapes of the glass you blow. There's a lot of sculpture there. There's a lot of ceramic looking sculpture work. You did ceramic for a while?
Yes. Yeah. I actually had a bachelor's degree in ceramics and went to this school to get my Cal State University of Fullerton to get my master's right. in ceramics. Started taking glass, and that was the end of ceramics. And then I ended up down the line getting my master's in glass. Right. But I tell you, when you're working with glass, you know, when you're working with lava, that's 2,000 degrees, it's incredible. It's dangerous. Unfortunately, I've always been drawn to dangerous things in my life. Big waves, mountain biking down. Laguna is one of the dangerous places to mountain bike, but you do get some good endorphin rushes down that stuff.
Yeah, you do.
I'm over the endorphin rushes. I'm getting too old for that stuff, but I still love it to get. I just went mountain biking the other day, but for 30 years, I mountain biked in the beginning, and I don't mountain bike quite as much as I used to.
Right. You know, and a finished product, you get an endorphin rush when you have a cool finished product?
Well, that's more of an aesthetic rush. Okay. You know, you look at it and you go, oh, that's, you know, and one thing I do love about glass or any art is that you can touch somebody's heart with that piece of glass. I remember, I don't know if you know who Denise Richardson, she was in a show and she came.
Yes. Okay.
Home Improvement.
Yes.
And she came down and she was crying on a piece of my glass. And I said, that's it. That's what I go for. If I can get that, which you can't is that often. I mean, it's pretty hard to right. be moved that much by glass, but when it happens, I go, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Love that.
And you've had that effect on our listeners. When we announced that you were going to be on, our listeners talked about the iconic Starburst glass sculpture that was located at the foot of the waterfall.
Yes.
Tell us about that piece.
Well, that's there's a school up in Seattle called Pilchuck, and a guy that founded the school, Dale Chihuly, very famous glass artist. He started doing these pieces where he was putting multiple pieces together to make a sculpture out of small pieces. Well, that's, of course, where the idea came from. My hats are off to him for what he's done to the glass movement. But so I wanted to bring some in the 50th anniversary. I wanted to bring some to the sawdust. You know, we needed to step it up and go, wow, yeah, we've been here for 50 years. Thank you for coming, but we're going to make some new stuff. And of course, I just donated it to the sawdust because I love to have great art there. Right. And it's, I'm glad that people, you know, find interest in it, love it, and are enjoying it. That's the important part. You know?
Clearly effective on the audience here. And by the way, I'm letting our audience know, if you want to check out any of his glass, you have a website, right?
I have a website.
Tell us the website so they can look as we're talking.
The website is, of course, under my name, brucefreund.com, www.brucefreund.com, F-R-E-U-N-D. Yeah, there's work in there. There's a lot of stuff that I don't show. I make very large, like he was talking about, the piece that's in there, this big sculpture, it's about 4 feet across. It's 300 pieces of glass. I don't really show that in my booth because your booth is 10 by 10 feet, and there's that would be my whole booth. So I show more of the stuff that is smaller, vases, perfume bottles, paperweights, glasses, functional stuff, things like that. But I always do commission work and things like that. So if you look at the website, you'll see a bunch of stuff that is one-of-a-kind pieces or big sculptural pieces, which I don't really show at the show, but they're available upon request, or they can be commissioned to made.
When you're starting to the creative process and you're working on a big piece that's going to have multiple smaller pieces attached, do you already know 5 steps down the road what that smaller piece will look like or what it needs to look like? Or does that happen as you build?
Well, no, you, from doing it for many years, you go, okay, this is what I'm building. And they could ask for a certain shape. You could have a teardrop. You could have a round globe. It can be burst at the top and come down to a thin little line. So when you go into the process, you go, okay, this is the shape they're looking for. You don't, you know, people go, well, you know, it's the same thing even with glasses. When you make glasses, you don't make 6 to get 6. You make 10 to get 6 because you're dealing with fluid liquid. And every time you gather the heat, everything determines the size. So they don't come out the same. So when it comes to the sculptures and making these things, you make long ones, you make small ones, you make fat ones, you make round ones, you make all different types. So you may have a sculpture and you need 200 pieces. Well, you're going to make 250. Right. So this piece may fit in here. This piece may, and you look at the sculpture as you're building it up and you go, okay, that looks good there. This fits in there. And then you let it flow into the shape with all these extra pieces. And you go, that one's not going to work. This is going to work. Okay, that's what I'm going to take. That's going to work.
Do you find inspiration or do you ever get inspiration from flat canvas artists? Let's say you'll see a painting there at Sawdust or anywhere, you'll see a painting or something on a canvas and that inspires you for a piece of three-dimensional glass?
Occasionally that happens. More I get inspiration, it could be from old ancient art. It could be from pottery, ceramics. It could be from glass. It could be from jewelry. It could be from anything. You know, we went to New York a couple weeks ago and we went to the Met and these things, and I'm looking at this, the ceramic and the metal work, and I'm just going, and they had knife collection. I'm going, it's making me think, okay, we take this, more ideas than I got time to make it.
Right. You know? Right. And, okay, here we go. I'm making this left turn and you're going to make it with me here. Favorite music you listen to while you're blowing? Do you listen to music? And does that help in the creative process if you do?
Well, I love to listen to music, of course, when I'm blowing. A lot of times I don't, but a lot of times I do. I don't at the sawdust because I like to communicate with people. And if they're asking questions, I'm talking. But there's definitely some music that can get me moving, you know, and stuff like that. Anything that's a highly motivated, you know, Kenny Loggins, Light the Fire. I mean, you know, there's some songs that are, you know, there's all these songs about fire and everything. You know, James Brown, I Am the God of Fire, you know, that sometimes you listen to and you're getting all pumped up and everything. So I love to listen to music, and it's just a lot of fun to blow glass and listen to music at the same time. Now, some of the glass blowers, they blast the music and they blow.
Right.
And they just, they're listening to the rhythm of the music and going on with it.
You know,
Bruce Hornsby, there's a lot of people I love to listen to. And it makes the time fly,
right.
You know, when you're listening to music and blowing glass. And it gets me to concentrate on the glass. And glass, like anything, when you let it flow out of you without thinking,
right.
That's when you make the best stuff. Same with music.
Right.
When you just let it flow out, that's when the best stuff is going to be created.
That's beautifully put. And Arthur Brown, I am the god of hellfire.
Most people don't even know who that is.
Yeah, I know. I played him a couple of weeks ago on the Personal Stash. But I'm glad you mentioned him and brought him up. You told me a fascinating story about Beth and Steve Wood. Can you share that with us?
I can share. I mean, I love those guys. I've actually known them from years. We did actually karate together at one point. Their oldest son did karate and another friend of mine did it. And they were in a band, Honk, which I loved. I was a surfer for 35 years. My joints are a little bit out of whack now from surfing for so many years. They were in Honk, and I love Five Summer Stories. If you've never seen that movie, you need to see it. But the first opening scene of that movie, Jerry Lopez is riding 10 to 12 foot pipeline, which at the time, now this is 40 years ago, and it was at the Laguna High School, they were playing this, and Honk was playing the music, and this dun-dun-dun-dun comes on, and it's Honk's music, and it's just, everybody stands up and they're blown away. But anyway, back to the story. So they had this fantastic band, and they were the next cutting-edge band that was going to be it. It was going to happen, and one of their lead guitarists, they for some reason they were in CBS talking to the president of CBS, and you know how people that are up at the end of the record industry, they're more interested in commercial music that they're going to make money. They don't really care about what you're creating. They care about what the end product is and how much money they're going to make. The Beach Boys had the same problem. And Richard told him, he said, you can shove it. We don't care. And then he goes, the president goes, you're not going to be playing music for the next 20 years because we own the rights to you. And that's the end. And that was basically the end of Honk at that point, which was sad because they were creative force. It ends up that three or four of the members of the band ended up Kenny Loggins. They went to Chicago.
Right.
This was a talented band, and they split and went. And occasionally, now they go down and they play at the Coach House once every summer. And it's fantastic to go see them, and they're very talented artists.
I'm going to throw them on in the background.
There you go.
Yeah, you're right.
This was the song that opened up, and you're just like going, wow. Everybody stood up and just went, because I'd never seen, the Wedge breaks pretty big. That's a big break. I body surfed there for years, but I never saw a wave that perfect break like that. And if you know Jerry Lopez, he'd stand up on a wave that was a 20-foot face, and he'd act like it was 3 feet. He'd take this bottom turn, and he'd arch back, and he'd be in the tube just letting it flow right over him.
That's, you know what, as you describe that, that's, and I never want to blow smoke in your face. That's the same fearlessness that you show blowing glass.
It only takes 40 years. No big deal. You pick it up easy,
Are you working on any pieces right now that you hope to finish soon?
I'm working on, I'm always trying to work on new series because that's the passion to me of glass. The passion is evolving, doing new things. And I'm working on this lace series now. Occasionally another place where I get motivation, I'll just go look at YouTube videos of the Italian masters. There's a guy named Lino Tagliapea who has now retired, but he was the number one glass blower in the world. And his designs, if you're a glass blower and you look at a piece and you can't figure out their designs, whoa, that's saying something, But anyway, some of these series, they take months and months to develop because they're, and this is just me, they're complex to do. Now, I can go take little chips of glass and roll that in the piece, and you can make a beautiful piece, but that isn't what's motivating me. That isn't the thing that makes me go, and then you get done with the series, you look at it and go, oh, wow, that's radical. I'm so ecstatic about this series,
Right.
That's what I go for with the new stuff. I still got to pay the bills. I still got to make the stuff I know it's going to sell, but I prefer to do the new stuff because it's very invigorating to my soul to do that stuff.
Right. Now, you had mentioned off air that some mistakes that maybe a younger glass blower or someone who's not as into it or as has been into it as long as you makes, and that's by bringing big expensive pieces and not really worried about the little $150 or $125 pieces, right?
Right, yeah.
So you do both. You have, at your booth, we can find both expensive pieces.
Expensive and not expensive. And,
right.
You know, I because I've been fortunate enough to go to a couple of these schools that teach these very complex systems, such as you take sheets of glass and you cut them many, many times and you spend basically 100 hours on a piece. And so that 100-hour piece is sitting next to a piece that took 1 hour to make. And you really have to explain to people because they're going, well, why is this piece $1,000 and this piece $150? So I love to explain to people the complexities of glass and the way these pieces are made. And they go, oh, I understand now. Yeah, okay, now I understand why that piece is so much more expensive. You know, and it may move them or it may not. I mean, sometimes people come in, glass collectors will come in and they'll look at a piece that's a very complicated piece. They won't even hesitate. Oh, I want that piece right there.
Right, right.
Because they're already educating glass and they know what's going on. So they just go, wow, love it.
Gotta have it.
Yeah.
Right. So. Is it competitive? Is glass blowing a competitive field?
Well, I think any field is compatible. I will say that glass blowers are kind of a unique breed of people because...
I'd say you're unique. I really find you unique.
Because glass is a very abusive medium to you personally.
Right.
You burn yourself. It's physically heavy. You cut yourself. There's a lot of loss in it. Right. It's complicated to do. It's very hard to get good at it. You just have to hammer and hammer at it. And the only way, as with most things, you're going to improve in it is to push yourself past the limit. You got to push yourself where you're dropping pieces. You're losing pieces. If you stay, and this goes for life, if you stay behind that web of security and easiness, you'll never evolve as a human being. You need to push it past the limit and move on to really not only enjoy life, but to make the pieces that are you're capable of as an artist or as a human being.
Right. You know, man, you've just spoken to every member of the audience. You've just spoken to everyone through that. That was beautiful. Thank you so much. And once again, where do we find you online?
We find me online on Bruce Freund, FREUND.com. If you look at Bruce Freund, you'll find their stuff in there. You know, we can't hide from the internet. It's everywhere. You know?
And if you're looking to meet him in person and maybe check out some of this fantastic work, the Sawdust Art Festival demonstrations on a regular basis. Your booth is right there next to the demonstration. And right. Demonstration cage, is that the right word for it?
The animal cage. They keep us caged to protect the innocent. Yes, they do. You know?
Always a pleasure to speak with you. I can't wait to have you back again, man. Let's do this again sometime.
We love it. Anytime.
All right. That's Bruce Freund, 826 The Time on the Mornings with Ed Show.
This disclaimer is a statement notifying listening audiences that any opinions expressed on our shows are not representative of Laguna Radio, Inc., its management, or its board of directors.